Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring a new UBS report entitled Cryptocurrencies Beneath the Bubble. The popularity of these new digital platforms has soared over the last decade or so, but as we'll hear, there remain plenty of reasons to believe, first, that this is merely a bubble, and second, that they may never become mainstream currencies. Despite this and other reservations, we'll ask our experts to try and explain their popularity, at least in certain quarters. We'll talk too about some of the anarchic behaviour around cryptocurrencies and how a lack of central bank and government influence in this space helps to explain that. We'll also look, as the title of the report suggests, beneath the bubble at the underlying technology and what that may mean in the future. We start with Kiran Ganesh, strategist and executive director at UBS Wealth Management, who worked on this piece of research. Kiran, what were the objectives when you and your colleagues were first looking at this area?
Yeah, well, we were seeing the very sharp rise in the price of Bitcoin, and that really just got us thinking, you know, should we be thinking more about this? You know, is this a new asset class? Are we missing something? And we were getting, you know, lots of interest from client advisors, and clients were asking us about, you know, our thoughts on Bitcoin specifically. And that just led us on to looking at the topic more generally. We know that UBS has been doing a lot of work in the blockchain space with respect to our own business processes as well. So we thought this was just a topic worth exploring in more detail.
Next to Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist, UBS Wealth Management. Paul, the subtitle of this report is Beneath the Bubble. Maybe remind us all perhaps exactly what a bubble is first.
There is no formal definition of what a bubble is. It's not an economic term as such. It's more a media phrase. But there are probably four characteristics that most economists would agree make up a bubble. So the first thing is that a bubble occurs when an asset is trading significantly above fundamental value. And that's a fairly obvious statement. If there's no fundamental value to the asset class, then you've got a bubble. The second thing is that bubbles generally occur when there's something new going on. Because the point about a bubble is that people need to be able to say, well, fundamentals don't matter because this time it's different. And whenever you hear the phrase, this time it's different, you need to get really worried. So normally we see bubbles around new technology or around new financial techniques. The third thing that marks a bubble is that there has to be a delay between the bubble starting to build and you actually being able to get real economic value out of it. Because if it becomes apparent within 2 weeks that this thing's worthless, then the bubble never gets a chance to build. But if you're saying, no, in 2 years or 3 years or 5 years' time, everyone's going to be using this, then you get a chance for the bubble to build. The final characteristic of a bubble is they burst. That's, as it were, the defining characteristic of a bubble, that you get a significant decline in price after the hype. And that's really what marks it out, because that tells you just how much speculation has been. Of course, it's not very helpful saying that, you know, a bubble occurs when it bursts, because that's too late for the investor, though it does help economists identify bubble periods.
And Paul Donovan, back to you. How do these bubble dynamics speak to the cryptocurrency space specifically?
If we look at cryptocurrencies today, I think these are trading above any conceivable fundamental value. Cryptocurrencies will never be currencies in the real world. The likelihood of a cryptocurrency being accepted for tax payments is close to nil in any meaningful sense, which means they won't be a medium of exchange. They have novelty, though, and that works with them being part of a bubble. They're not giving real-world value now. The cryptocurrency enthusiasts say, yes, but in 10 years' time, everyone's going to be using them. Well, that's the characteristic that we often see in a bubble. And then finally, you know, it hasn't burst yet, but I think at some point it will have to burst. You know, this is not something which makes economic sense.
Cryptocurrencies have soared over the last 10 years or so. Advocates say, look, this is the new mainstream means of exchange. This is the future. Kiran Ganesh, can I put it to you? You and your colleagues are rather more, what, guarded than that?
Yes, we're sceptical that cryptocurrencies will ever become mainstream currencies. And the main reason, in our view, was really around the consideration that governments, we doubt, would ever accept currencies that are not government approved as tax. And individuals, businesses all need to pay taxes. And if the currency that you are transacting in isn't eligible to pay tax with, then you're running a big risk. So we can't really see a scenario when consumers and businesses are really going to be willing to sort of take this up in any big way. So as such, we wouldn't expect to see them become mainstream currencies. And we obviously considered the thought that maybe, you know, governments would start to accept cryptocurrencies to make sort of tax payments with. But again, we doubt that governments would ever be willing to take exchange risk themselves. You know, they like to be able to charge taxes in currencies which they can issue and to some extent manipulate. So we doubt that we're ever going to get to a point when they become mainstream.
From the central bank and government perspective, there's an issue around the regulating of values, a lack of the kind of stabilisers that are available for regular currencies. Kiran Ganesh again, how much of an issue is this?
The thing with regular currencies, the pound, the US dollar, is that you can't issue more of it as an individual. You know, it's all down to the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve to control the supply to try and make sure that they meet demand. Whereas with cryptocurrencies, you know, anyone can make up a new cryptocurrency, you know, essentially tomorrow with the right technology. So it means that the supply of cryptocurrencies in aggregate is essentially unlimited. So that means that the only thing that affects their value is just the demand. There's no particular way of controlling that. And that makes them very, very volatile. So, you know, if you own some pounds in your bank account or dollars in your bank account, you can be reasonably sure that, you know, given a little bit of inflation, but reasonably sure that a pound today can buy roughly the same amount of goods as it can tomorrow. With cryptocurrencies, it might be able to buy twice as many goods tomorrow if the bubble continues, but it might also be able to buy a tenth of as many goods tomorrow if there's a crash. So you don't have that level of certainty that you get with other currencies, and we think, again, that would be another barrier to uptake.
Kiran Ganesh. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the technologies beneath the cryptocurrencies bubble. Let's hear next from Sundeep Gantori in the UBS Wealth Management COO in Singapore, a director and equity analyst covering the global tech sector. He's going to tell us more about blockchain and the compelling underlying technologies at work here. Sundeep, maybe let's start with that question. What is blockchain technology again? Remind us of that and perhaps tell us some of its key advantages.
Blockchain technology basically refers to distributed databases. To put it simple, these are shared and continuously reconciled databases. So unlike the traditional databases, which are run on a master replica architecture, under blockchain, every user in the system has a copy of the database. Now, the problem with the traditional databases is that they're cumbersome. They require huge investments in back offices, mainly to reconcile and also to verify the validity of the transactions. Whereas on blockchain, individual users do not need to rely on a central party. So the technology reduces costs, and additionally, blockchain improves security, as any potential change to the database has to be verified by majority of the users, which is basically done through cryptography. So this makes the system more robust, and since there is no central party, there is also no risk of cyber attack or malfunction. So there are a lot of advantages for blockchain technology compared to many traditional databases.
Next, back to Paul Donovan. Paul, if I can ask you, given all of the factors we've been hearing about, the lack of likelihood for cryptocurrencies to be used in tax transactions, for example, their ultimate lack of potential, I suppose, to be used as a store of value, what is the appeal then?
I think that there are a number of things which explain the appeal. The first is that they are not something which is controlled by governments. And there is an has been an anarchic element to technology. This sort of republic of technology that is independent of governments, and we can do our own thing. And we heard this first in the height of the dot-com bubble. Governments just didn't matter. But of course, as Facebook and Alphabet and other tech companies are now finding out, governments do matter. And they do regulate the technology companies, and they are becoming increasingly involved with technology companies. This idea of anarchic behavior around cryptocurrencies is certainly something which is seized with enthusiasm, but it possibly isn't true. The second thing is that a lot of people have become concerned that as central banks have been printing money, that may create inflation in the future, whereas there is a limit to how much a single cryptocurrency can be created. Now, there are two problems with that as well. The first is that you may be able to limit the supply of one cryptocurrency, but you can create many, many cryptocurrencies. I mean, there are thousands of these things popping up all of the time. And the second problem is that cryptocurrency supply can never go down. Money supply can go down. The Federal Reserve today is literally destroying $10 billion a month of money supply because it's saying, no, we need to maintain the value of the dollar, and the way to do that is to reduce the supply. You cannot reduce the supply of a cryptocurrency. Once it's created forever, and that becomes a problem.
So where does that demand come from? How does it work, Paul? Perhaps you can tell us that.
There may be demand in the illegal economy. This is a concern of a number of people looking at the cryptocurrencies. If you don't intend to pay taxation, if you don't want government control, this may be a mechanism which can be used. There is a degree of an anonymity about the process, which also appeals to a number of people. Perhaps the other thing to say is that conventional asset classes recently have been somewhat boring. We haven't had much volatility in financial markets. Perhaps some people like the excitement of a volatile asset class, even if at the end of the day it doesn't have any real value.
Interesting stuff from Paul Donovan, particularly a little earlier on the anarchic elements to some of the technological developments. And despite those reservations, especially with regard to cryptocurrency, what about this critical question that we often raise? What does it mean from the investment viewpoint? Sundeep Ganturi again. Sundeep, how should investors best position with regard to the underlying blockchain technology?
Investing in blockchain today is like investing in internet in the mid-90s. Back then, we had very few companies exposed to blockchain. We think that blockchain can lead to many such disruptive technologies the way internet has created. But I think investors should also bear in mind that we are still in the early days. There are also some technological shortcomings that need to be resolved. Having said that, if investors are looking for long-term opportunities within blockchain, I think they can start to position in two broad groups: technology enablers and early and successful adopters. So technology enablers gives them exposure to companies which are investing in blockchain technology, and those adopters are basically those companies which will benefit from efficiency gains. If I look at specifically within technology enablers, we like the software and semiconductor companies, which stands to benefit from blockchain, and also some of the technology platform companies, which will embrace blockchain technology. And these companies will be able to launch new products and services and ultimately able to disrupt some of the incumbent companies in other industries. So for the time being, we think that looking at some of the technology companies would make a lot of sense, mainly the enablers, which are in the software, semiconductor, and some of the platform companies.
And Sundeep Ganturi, perhaps a final thought too from you on the other key future challenges that are ahead, in particular critical issues around, I suppose, integration and regulation here.
We think that to become a mainstream technology, blockchain may have to resolve some of the challenges related to regulation or in terms of managing speed or other integration-related challenges. Over the next few years, these challenges obviously get addressed as the ecosystem grows. And at UBS, we estimate that blockchain could add as much as 300 to 400 billion of economic value globally by 2027. So we are definitely excited about the long-term opportunities from the blockchain technology.
So the takeaway is, you've heard a lot about cryptocurrencies and we're in the midst of a speculative bubble, but don't let that distract from the real transformative potential of some of the underlying technologies like blockchain, which can go beyond mere disruption and promise huge additions to the global economy, maybe by as much as $300 to $400 billion by 2027. That brings us to the end of this 162nd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24.